ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Every so often, a video pops up online that makes it feel like the future has arrived.
I'm Neo. I'm here to help around the house.
One X says their humanoid robot Neo will do all your chores.
So that you can focus on what matters to you while your Neo does the rest.
But can he though?
On my visit, I didn't see Neo do anything autonomously.
For decades, we've been promised robot butlers, so why am I still folding my own laundry? I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we give you the backstories behind the big stories. It's available now on ABC Listen.
In the first week of summer, dozens of homes have been destroyed in bushfires at Dolphin Sands in Tasmania, on the New South Wales central coast, and at Bulla north of Newcastle, where a firefighter also died. Today, ABC Central Coast reporter Sarah Forster on the homes that were lost and the ones still standing after Saturday's fire. And an expert on building fire-safe houses in high-risk areas, on which homes are prepared for the fire season ahead. I'm Sydney Peed. On Gadigal Land, Sydney, this is ABC News Daily. Sarah, you've been on the fire ground in Coolawong on the central coast in New South Wales. Take me back to Saturday. It was terribly hot and the winds picked up. When did it first seem like homes would be under threat?
Well, in this situation, it all happened so quickly. As you say, we had the hot conditions. It was very hot and dry with a total fire ban, and it had been very hot and dry the day before as well.
Heatwave conditions continue to grip large parts of the country. Gusty winds later this afternoon will add a layer of complexity for fire conditions.
It didn't seem as though we knew that homes were under threat until they almost had the flames lapping at the door.
Some extraordinary vision that we are seeing from the news helicopter. We can see at least 10 homes have been burnt as a result of this bushfire. As you mentioned,
it seems that this fire, which is under investigation, came out of absolutely nowhere, and there was less than 15 or 10 minutes for people to grab what they could and get out.
I'm trying to put the embers out at the front, and I did for a little bit until I realised that just in the other half of the driveway, which is our access road, it was on huge fire, and I've just gone, oh. And I've jumped in the car and just slept.
About 140 houses were evacuated, so a few hundred people in that main part of when the fire was coming through on Saturday afternoon were displaced. Some people have told me that they didn't even have time to get out in their car. They simply ran out the door in the shoes they were wearing, or possibly no shoes.
I only had a pair of shorts and t-shirt on, didn't even have any thongs on. And everything from my grandparents through to mine that over the years, all gone.
A lot of these houses were sort of wedged between bushland and the rail line, so some people had to meet emergency services, and a hole was cut in the railway fence and they walked across the tracks. That was the only way that they could get out, because there was no advanced warning that this fire was coming.
Just terrifying. So a lot of people were fleeing from their homes, but a lot of residents did stay behind. Some really fought tooth and nail trying to protect their homes. Just tell me about Sarah and Craig Saxon-Gill.
Well, Sarah and Craig Saxon-Gill are a couple I spoke to on Sunday when they came back to the scene, and their worst fears were realised. There was nothing left on their property.
What happened? Sarah smelt the smoke first, and I said to Sarah, anything you think's important, grab that and just get out of here.
And with my mum as well.
Yeah. And when I spoke to them, they told me that they really struggled with that, because they felt that from their perspective as homeowners, they had done all of the right things. They were bushfire prepared.
Basically, because we had a sprinkler on top of the house, and we'd just cleared the backyard, and I stayed back to stuff rags in all of the gutters, which we cleaned the gutters the weekend before. It was fire ready.
100 foot hoses on each side of the house.
Yeah, all the houses around the house.
Yep.
And yeah, and so we thought we were ready.
Even as recently as the weekend prior to the fire, they had all clearing done under their home because it was a home that was partially on stilts and the grass can sort of build up underneath. So that was cleared. They had their hoses ready to go. They had bushfire sprinklers on the roof of their home. And indeed, Craig mentioned to me that he'd been through a bushfire scenario there about 20 years prior when he blocked his gutters, turned on the hose, filled up his gutters. So if there were embers and spotting, that the embers would extinguish in that water around his home. Mm. It didn't play out the same way this time, even though he hoped it would have.
And so we thought we were ready. But yeah, so I stayed back to stuff the rags in the gutters and turn on the sprinkler on the roof. And when I turned it on, there was no water pressure.
And they weren't the only ones. 16 houses burnt down in that bushfire. 9 were badly damaged. Sarah, you've been there over the past few days. People are returning to find they've lost everything. What have you seen?
Look, overwhelmingly, I think the feeling is that these people are stoic and they are incredibly brave. So people are there standing where their homes once were. Some have told me of their intentions when they're allowed to pick up a rake and sift through and see if there is any piece of anything that was in their home that they can salvage and take with them. It's strange to understand how one house could burn to the ground and then the house next door to it is still standing. It's an awful sight.
It seems so miraculous when one house is spared and one house isn't. Do any of those residents have a sense of what might have helped them? Were they newer homes? Had they done a lot more preparation for the fire season?
Well, there were some homes there that are newer and they were built to more modern codes, including being bushfire resistant. They were built by a local builder, Steve Foskett, and he actually stayed to protect his home as well. So his home was built to code, like a few of the others that he built along that stretch of road in Cooleywong.
And then I looked up the back of my place and it was all alight, so I spent the next 3-4 hours up there putting out spot fires and doing a trail break. Yeah. And I'm building a house right next to the one that went down. And I just built a house right next to the two that went down. And it's fire rated, so probably saved it, who knows.
But certainly the more modern homes that were built to those more stringent codes, they have held up, but they do have significant damage to the exterior and around the yards as well.
Okay, Sarah. Well, the mop-up has certainly begun now. What is the community feeling at this moment? What are they in need of?
I think they're in need of support for the people who have been displaced, support to have a roof over their head for the coming weeks, months, it could even be years. It's difficult terrain. It's going to take a long time even for some parts of that stretch where the fire went through to be declared safe for people to move back in, even if their home wasn't damaged. There are people who weren't homeowners, who are renters, who may not have had insurance on the things in their home. So some people are going to be absolutely starting from scratch.
I'm Colin Wood and I work on the Australian Standards Committee for construction of buildings in bushfire prone areas, and I'm also working with the Resilient Building Council.
Colin, when you look at houses that are in the bush, is it clear to you just by looking at them which homes are likely to survive a bushfire and which homes are not?
Yeah, once you look at a building, and from my perspective, I always look at a building from the ground up and I start to go through and look at the vulnerabilities. Most of the vulnerabilities are, of course, at that ground level. So I look at the vegetation that's next to it. I look whether or not they've got a pathway around it, what the materials are for construction at that lower ground level, and then look as I move up the building, look at the windows and the doors, look at the type of materials that they have for the walls, and then, of course, the roofing material. So some you can see straight away that the elements of construction is inappropriate. They are quite vulnerable at that point.
But not all homes will be impacted equally this fire season. If you've got a newly built home, it will have been made with stricter fire safety building standards. Just tell me about those.
Yeah, if you're building a brand new home or additions to a home, then it has to comply with the current requirements of the building code. Now, when they're built to that, that considers the primary bushfire attack mechanisms. The primary bushfire attack mechanisms are the ones that come from the vegetation that's on fire. So that will be embers, radiant heat and direct flame contact. We find that about 80% of all buildings are lost due to ember attack. So therefore, it's really, really important. This is why the Australian standard focuses on ember protection and sealing up the buildings. The issue will be, of course, whether or not the neighbours are also built to that standard. Because if the neighbours aren't built to that standard, then you could see building to building fire, and that can make those new buildings quite vulnerable in a bushfire situation.
And these building standards have been in place for a long time now, but they've also improved a lot over time. So what does construction require now that makes homes so much safer in bushfires?
Well, it puts it down into what we call a BOW level or a bushfire attack level. It's basically predicated on the distance you are from the predominant vegetation that's on fire. So the further you are away, the lower the number you get.
Mm.
We have five of them, which is BOW 12.5, 19, 29, 40, and, of course, flame zone. I like to say to people that it's like a campfire. The further you are away from the campfire, the less radiant heat you get. The closer you are, the higher the radiant heat. Once you've determined your BOW, the construction requirements are set for the subfloor supports, the floors, the walls, the windows and doors, the roofs, verandas and decks, and finally, of course, water and gas supplies. So the higher the BOW, the more stringent the requirements are for those elements.
Is it just a matter of the materials that are used, or is it sort of the way the houses are designed as well?
Oh, it's a bit of both. The Australian standard doesn't look at design, but it does look at the materials. So materials like in the lower BOWs, you'll be able to use some timber. Some certain timbers can be used in those areas. But as you get up into BOW 40 and BOW flame zone, it's a timber-free zone. And they're looking at non-combustible materials as they go through there.
But the thing is, so many older homes across Australia are really vulnerable to bushfires. How big a problem is older homes when it comes to fire safety? And what is it about them that makes them particularly vulnerable?
Well, we like to call the older homes the legacy homes. Mm. They're the homes that are built prior to any standards. They can be quite vulnerable, but they could also have some means of protection already inherent in their design. So you could have a brick veneer home that really will perform quite well in a bushfire situation. But it's all about sealing it up, because if you don't seal up in and around your windows and your doors and your roof, you're going to have embers inside the building. Once they get inside the building from the predominant vegetation, then that's going to be a problem for you. Of course, if you have landscaping right next to your building and that catches fire, that's going to put direct flame onto your building. So you've got to look at those too. There's lots of things that you can do to an existing building to have it upgraded.
Okay, let's talk about that. What can people who live in these older homes do? Is it possible to retrofit houses to become more fire safe?
Oh, absolutely. You can retrofit a house really easily. And it doesn't have to be really costly either. There's what we call low-hanging fruit that you can just grab and do yourself. And a lot of that is just clearing things away from the building, combustible things. Get rid of that garden furniture that's right next to windows and doors or glass sliding doors that you might have on a deck. Don't store things underneath your building. If you do have landscaping around your building, keep it 1.5 metres clear of the building so that it doesn't actually direct a flame directly onto the building. There are other things like things that people don't think of is cars and boats and caravans, because all those can be ignited. And if they're in an open carport and you've got a window going onto those areas, when they're flaming, they'll smash that window and you've got a fire in your building.
Mm.
So you can lose it quite easily from that. They're the secondary fire impacts and people have control about that.
Okay. What about some of the modifications people can do to their homes? Like what kind of modifications are there to retrofit homes?
Well, you can enclose the subfloor area. You don't have to enclose it with masonry, but you can enclose it with a mesh if you wanted to, particularly if you've cleared out all the storage underneath it. That'd be good. You can also put screens on windows. You can put draft excluders on doors. You can go and get these seals that you can get from any hardware, and you can seal where the wall hits the window and the door. And you can also seal around the corrugations of the roof. Easy stuff. With a little bit more money, you could put gutter guards and valley guards on the house, but that's getting up to about $5,000 a home, so it can be quite expensive that way.
Is it a problem to have people living in homes that are at higher risk of burning down in places that are very prone to bushfires? Can anything be done about that?
People like to live in the bush. I get that. I live in Katoomba, so I know what it's like living in the bush. But I think that what people need to understand is that if their home isn't built for it and there is a bushfire, that they need to get out early. They need to either be able to have it resilient to the bushfire impacts or just leave. Their safety is most important to us.
Colin Wood works with the Resilience Building Council and is on the Australian Standards Committee for the construction of buildings in bushfire-prone areas. Sarah Forster is a reporter for ABC Central Coast. Audio production for this episode by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sydney Peed. ABC News Daily will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.